And we have had the opportunity here to explore some of the historical context, which Mr. Ibrahim, joining us now, surely knows. This will enable him to get to the business at hand, which is the current, ever-present, seemingly unstoppable and growing incident of the sexual enslavement of children by Muslims. Raymond Ibrahim, welcome to WCGO 1590. I'm Franklin Raff. You know, we caught your piece called Muslims Sexually Enslaving Children. And I said to Frenchie, we got to get this guy on just to tell the whole story because it's stunning. It's unbelievable stuff. So thank you for joining us. We've warned our listeners that some of these highlights may be extremely disturbing. We warn you that again. Welcome to the program, Mr. Ibrahim.
Hello, Franklin. Thank you for having me. Yeah, absolutely. This business of Islamic sex gangs and rape gangs proliferating all around the place, what happened in the UK is definitely not an aberration. It fits in very well with other events and anecdotes that are happening all around the Islamic world, all around Western parts of the world, in fact. In the article, for example, I highlight several instances in Australia. You had, you know, however you want to describe it, a sex gang of Muslim, quote-unquote, youth. That's basically all you'll get in the mainstream media. Is just
with the Muslim youths? Yeah, why are they youths? They're rapists.
Well, or Asian youth, because they don't want to highlight the real commonality. This isn't about them being Asian. This isn't about them being youth. If you look at it, for example, where this is happening, in the article I did, which just took a little research on my part, I found this happened in Australia. It happened in the United States, in Minnesota, by Somali youth in this instance. Of course, what do the Somali youth have in common with Pakistani youth in the UK or with Lebanese youth in Australia or with basically all throughout the Islamic world? It's basically the real common denominator is Islam.
They vote Democrat.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
It's okay. Because this concept, you have to understand, it really traces back to Islamic teaching. You know, I'm not specifically talking about rape, but for example, the Prophet of Islam himself, Muhammad, when they would go on a raid or a jihad and conquer an area, he would be the first one to take the conquered women after he had slaughtered their husbands or fathers or brothers in front of them and take them and, as it's euphemized in Islamic history, marry them, quote unquote, which is basically, of course, rape. And this kind of mentality really is ingrained in Islamic teaching towards non-Muslims, towards so-called infidels who become very much dehumanized. They're just there for you to exploit and to enjoy because they're the enemy anyway. And then you can see why this is happening all around and why this and what's interesting to me about the UK to really trace it is, as you probably know, in the United Kingdom, the particular Muslim group that's there is mostly Pakistanis, or we can just say there's a lot of Pakistanis. Now, one of the worst countries that this is happening, Islamic countries, is Pakistan. If you go to Pakistan, you're going to find the same exact story. The only difference is it's so brazen. Because in every single case where a Pakistani, for example, or a Pakistani gang takes a Christian girl, and I have anecdotes from the age of 2 on up, you know, 2.
Well,
5,
actually,
7,
you know
9.
What? I want to get back to you because we have a hard break. First, I want to ask your permission, Mr. Ibrahim, if you will stay with us for the next segment of the program. We were a little bit late getting you on today. Will you be so kind as to join us in a moment? My guest, by the way, joining us, Raymond Ibrahim. Muslims Sexually Enslaving Children, a Global Phenomenon. You won't believe your ears if you dare to keep them open. This is 1590 WCGO. I'm Franklin Raff. Back in a moment.
This is the Franklin Raff Show on Chicago's new talk. WCGO.
Call-in number here in Chicago in the 847 area code 475-1590. 847-475-1590. It is not often that we get a guest as good as Mr. Ibrahim. One thing you should know, I'm going to tell you this, I think many people do not understand that a man like Raymond Ibrahim, who has a website, by the way, RaymondIbrahim.com, author of Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, producer of articles almost daily exposing the truth, the sad, vicious facts of a world that is increasingly doused with the history of this guy Muhammad and the moon god of Arabia, Allah, and this increasingly we're just dipped in it, and with it come the perversions, the rape, the sexual enslavement. I want you to know it's very hard to live this kind of life. You know, we adore and idolize our comedians. They make us laugh in funny movies. And our movie stars are constantly troubled, like as our president is, of the incursion of the press. But a guy like Raymond Ibrahim, our guest, has to worry about his life every day. It is not polite to ask people about threats that have been made on their life. It's not cool to say, hey man, you must have like 14 fatwas on you, dude. Because it's a reality that you live with terror. And I think that's all I can say about that. You can use your imagination for the rest. But it's the best way I can think of to say thank you first, before we're up against a break and we have to rush into it, to you, Raymond Ibrahim. And thank you for joining us here.
Thank you very much, Franklin. And it's pretty true, basically, all that you said. And most people are not aware of what it takes. But, you know, hey, one does what one must do. And so, because time is, of course, short, let me do what I do and continue telling you about this business of Islamic sex rapes. I wanted to tie it up, what happened in England, with what's happening in the rest of the world. And, of course, in Pakistan, where the majority of the Muslims of the UK come from, what you saw happening in the UK is habitual there, except there the police often help them. So, for example, last Easter Sunday morning, four or five Muslim men gang raped a seven-year-old Christian girl, and she was almost left dead when her Christian father pressed it and made an issue. The police kidnapped him hand in hand with the culprits, the rapists, and kept him in a place until they forced him to drop the case and not make a big issue out of it. And that's
how can you have a case? You can't have a case against a Muslim rapist when he rapes a seven-year-old girl, because first of all, they have to have two witnesses, don't they? Because a girl is worth half a man. So the girl is worth half a man and the witness is underage. So that's how you get away with it in the Muslim world.
And
rape a little seven-year-old.
And the witnesses have to be Muslim. And the witnesses have to be Muslim, too.
I forgot that part.
A non-Muslim is not trustworthy, so. And this sort of thing, in Egypt, for example, in 2011, Muslim-majority Egypt, where you have about 10%, let's say, Christians. In 2011, it was exposed, a quote-unquote sex ring, where they used to actually seduce and approach young Coptic girls, Christian girls from the age of 9 and so forth, and befriend them, and just like what happened in the UK, and then sexually compromise them and blackmail them and so forth. And of course, let's not forget about what actually did make it to the mainstream media a few months ago, the Boko Haram Nigerian kidnap of some 300 girls. And it was the same context, except in that case, the leader came up on TV very proud and saying, I abducted your girls. I will sell them on the market. Allah says I should sell. Because, of course, Islam does exonerate enslavement and selling infidels. And this, you can go on and on. I don't know if you recall, in Kuwait some years back, I actually translated it, a female politician, made a video, put it on YouTube, saying in order to fend off sexual immorality among Muslim male youth, let's reinstitute the sex slavery institution. That way they don't have to go around, sleep around, or watch, pornography, but they can just own slaves. And she actually gave an example and said, in the Chechnya war, you have all these pretty blonde-haired, blue-eyed Russian girls. Let's kidnap them, and when we conquer them, and sell them on the market. What's the big deal? And she said how she had
by the
all
way,
these
you,
Islamic
you see
clerks.
These, you see these girls all over, just as an aside. I've spent a reasonable amount of time in various countries in the Middle East, And countries aside, you know that there is the tradition of the Bedouin, who are really borderless people. And there are agreements, even with Israel, that confer to the ancient Bedouin their ancient rights of nomadic travel. And a very recent problem that has cropped up, even in Israel, I would speak of another country, but I'd be giving too much away. But this also is found in Israel, where, you know, it's basically services people who provide water and make sure that these families are well fed. You know, they live these wild lives. You know, the Bedouin, you know, take a couple of sheets of sheet metal and a stolen car and, you know, turn it into a, you know, sheep trading empire. I mean, you know, stuff that you and I wouldn't possibly understand. It's part of the Bedouin way of life. And they're finding these families, all of a sudden, there'll be a little white girl pop up, little blonde haired girl. And they say, well, no, that's our daughter, our new daughter. She gave birth last week. Couldn't possibly be the daughter, but they can't trace this stuff because the slavery is so ingrained that the girl has already passed through 10 hands on her way from, for instance, Chechnya. You know, very often they find girls that are kidnapped in Russia at these inordinately early ages. I mean, we don't see that in our countries. Let me tell you, for the listeners, so you understand, ladies and gentlemen, in North America, we see kidnapping of babies because of mental illness, usually some kind of mental illness, Munchausen, or some other kind of syndrome where the woman kidnaps a baby, can't have her own baby. And then we see kidnapping of teens for sexual purposes and girls in their 20s for sexual purposes. But only in the Muslim world do we see kidnapping of babies for sexual purposes regularly, as a matter of course, as a sort of an institution, a tradition. It's wild.
And, you know, to add and to try to, you know, shed light on why that is, of course, as you're pointing out, I know all societies and places you have the same sorts of crimes happening, but you find it systematic in certain places because it's justified by not just the religion, but by the founder. Remember, Muhammad, the exemplar, the great paragon of virtue for the Islamic world, was betrothed, quote unquote, to a 6-year-old girl, Aisha, consummating his marriage when she was a full 9 years old. And based on this and based on the teachings of Islam, and, you know, this may sound like a joke, a lot of people think, well, that means we can marry 9-year-old girls. And the fact is, it's actually younger than that. The logic is you can marry a girl, and I have videos of Islamic clerics from Saudi Arabia saying you can marry her even if she's still in the cradle. And all that matters is if she can physically handle it. So if a young 4 or 5-year-old girl or whatever, something in the cradle, can actually handle, as they say, quote unquote, the weight of the man, then it becomes permissible. And so when you have this sort of thing being taught, and, you know, the model, the exemplar, Muhammad did it, and it's taught in the Quran, and it's taught in mosques, and you hear it on satellite stations, and it's circulating in your mind, and then you juxtapose that with the fact that the infidel, the non-Muslim, is beneath us, they're our enemy, etc., you can see how, you know, white females in Britain or anywhere all around the Islamic world are being targeted and treated in such inhumane ways.
I gather from a preliminary overview, and I do not attempt to be a theologian, that kiddie rape is especially laudable in the instance of war. As you go over these not so well buried by the media instances of child enslavement and kiddie rape by these Muslim guys, are you seeing that as the black flag of Islam is rising and we see more and more of this sort of endless war for Allah, or at least a more outward approach, you know, they're sort of like coming out of the closet as Islamic warriors, and now that they're leaders have been kicked off the throne, you know, they're coming out for Allah. We're seeing more of this kiddie rape sort of being normalized in their societies and in ours, in London and France and everything else. Is it on the increase?
Well, what's on the increase, and this is how kiddie rape actually fits into it, is this logic that the non-Muslim, especially once conflicts erupt, and conflicts, so Muslim world starts a conflict and then says, okay, look, it's a formal jihad. You now enter the status of you're a subhuman, which is, even if you look at the Quran and the language that's used about slaves and such, they don't even use the pronoun. They don't say she. They use it like an animal. You own it. And this is the logic. So for in Sudan, for example, they killed an American a few years ago. I forget he was a journalist. I forget his name. But he was killed. And, you know, so Sudan had to actually, because it was an international issue, they arrested his Muslim killers. And he was killed in an Islamic concept. He was an infidel and so forth. And then all these Islamic theologians came out defending the murderers, saying the blood of an infidel is not equivalent to the blood of a Muslim because he is subhuman. And actually, this is a teaching in Islam, again, and they brought verses and they brought statements from the Prophet of Islam. So you can see how this mentality has become so ingrained so that when you see a little child who's an infidel, and you know, he just becomes something that it's a plaything and that you kill. Let me just give you a historical example from 100 years ago, the Ottoman Empire and the Turks and so forth. They would actually take little babies and put a gun at its face, little Christian babies. And the baby would not even know what the gun is. I think it's a toy. And they would do this in front of the parents. And it would actually put it, like, in its mouth. And then they would just basically pop, you know, destroy it, kill it right in front of the parents while it was laughing. And so, you know, this sort of cruelty and sadistic kind of approach goes all the way back to this, you know, inhuman view of the non-Muslim. He's not real. He's just an animal. And we can do anything with he or her, of course.
Yeah, it's funny how this sort of pattern repeats itself. We've seen this all over the world. When we think of the dehumanization of people most recently, I am drawn to the history in Africa of the Hutus and the Tutsis, who found it in their, you know, in their hearts, these Muslim guys, to chop off the parts of their brothers and sisters in the same village, guys they had known their whole lives, they turned on, calling them, you know, cockroaches, etc. Your piece sort of brought back to me the thought that we have not fulfilled our responsibility as humans in tracking this Nigerian gang called Boko Haram, and they kidnapped 300 girls, schoolgirls. I mean, you know, Christian schoolgirls. These are kids in tunics. You know, we tend to automatically dehumanize slightly, don't we, people in Africa. So I want you to remember, they look like you. They are schoolgirls in tunics and little collared shirts. And they took 300 of them, enslaved, presumably raped them. And what we got from our executive, as I remember, was a tweet. We got a tweet.
It's worse than that. It's actually a lot worse than that. And a couple of points about the Nigerian thing is, you know, that was finally the mainstream media picked up on it, forcing the Obama administration to tweet and whatnot and to grandstand and act like and wring their hands and act like they care. But the fact is, before that incident, there are countless anecdotes attributed to Boko Haram of what they did to Christians that would make that particular one pale in comparison. I'm talking about every Sunday going into churches, locking the doors, setting them on fire, slitting the throats of people who come out, bombing churches constantly on Easter and Christmas. And, of course, abducting and raping little Christian girls and so forth. This constantly happens. And a year ago, when the government of Nigeria went on a very particularly strong offensive against Boko Haram, John Kerry, who now appears to care, or he did last April when this 300 girls were abducted, was the one who actually sent a message to the president complaining about how their strong offensive of Boko Haram was killing so many Boko Haram members. 30 were killed. And he said, you can't do that. This is against human rights, et cetera, et cetera. And a year ago, also, Boko Haram, the same leader, came on video saying, we're going to strike, and I'm quoting him, we will strike fear in the hearts of Christians by kidnapping their women. And this was when Hillary Clinton was the one, when she was Secretary of State, who refused to designate Boko Haram as even a terrorist organization. Now she appears, after the 300 girls are kidnapped, talking about how we have to do something, this is not right, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just, you know, it's funny when
that's
the mainstream
insane,
media
because
actually picks up.
I have read reports on Boko Haram that are over 4 or 5 years old that are plainly state that this is a terrorist organization.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, look, I really would love to have you back. Raymond, you are brilliant. You are brave.
Thank you.
I appreciate the fact. I know that you do more than collate news stories. Raymond Ibrahim is the author of Crucified Again, crucified again. Ibrahim is spelled I-B-R-A-H-I-M. But if you just look up crucified again in Amazon, you can pick it up today or tomorrow. Just remember it, and you'll get the real skinny. Mr. Ibrahim, thank you. This is 1590 WCGO. Mr. Ibrahim, I hope to see you again soon, and I will expect to see you again soon.
Excellent. Thank you, Franklin.
Assumed name of Inspire Insurance Solutions.